Good morning. All right, we're going to do the second week of 2 Isaiah. Anybody have any pronoun frustration with Isaiah this week? Yeah. It is very rich, and we don't usually experience it that way. One of the things we talked about last week is we usually experience Isaiah in small little proverbs like chunks. We don't... And because it's difficult to take those big gulps in, because the pronouns change, and we're not sure what just happened from verse to verse. So we talked about some of that last week. This week, we'll continue the introductory work. The hinge for our study is 2 Timothy 3:16, which has this whole thing about Scripture being inspired, which we talked about, but the part we're claiming is the part that it applies to us, which means it has something for us. So that, you know, if we're experiencing Isaiah and we're not changing, then we're not holding our mouths right. If it's dry and intellectual, then we're not holding our mouths right. So we're going to try to hold our mouths right here, because any encounter with Scripture should change us. So, you know, if hope is what you need, comfort is what you need, peace, direction about how to live, it's all here. And we're going to get there. But there's some basic work that we have to do. And I'm trying to squeeze all this stuff in at the beginning of our class so that we can take big chunks of Isaiah and dedicate, you know, a class period to a big chunk. Here is the introductory stuff I feel like we need to cover. The first one, the framework for the class, we did that last week. This week, why 2 Isaiah? This is the week where I get kicked out, but Stuart's still not here to see it. Okay, you let him know what happens. There's also this context of pagan idolatry I would love to get to today. We'll see what happens. And then the fourth is the five audiences of Isaiah. One of the principles of interpretation is understanding the original audience and why something was written to that original audience. And when you do that, then you can get deeper meaning and you can also apply it correctly. We'll talk about that next week. But this week, why 2 Isaiah? Well, first of all, back to the fearless faith thing, there's nothing for us to be afraid of in people having strong opinions about a different reading of Scripture than we have. Either they're right or they're wrong. Truth is truth. All truth is from God. If they're right, we have something to learn. If they're wrong, we have something to learn. We have nothing to fear about it, so we're not going to hold those things, like we said last week, at a distance and pretend they don't exist. So lots of people think the back half of Isaiah was written by someone different than the first half of Isaiah. Actually, there are lots of people who think there are multiple authors for the back half of Isaiah. So when you study this stuff, first Isaiah, they say, is chapters 1 through 39, generally. Well, that's not always exactly the same for everyone. And they generally agree that Isaiah wrote that. And then 2 Isaiah is written by this guy who is unnamed, so they call him Deutero-Isaiah. And he may, in some people's opinion, have written the whole back half of Isaiah, or he may have written part of it and someone else wrote part of it. Now, I don't know how to pronounce Treto-Isaiah. Third Isaiah, essentially, is the third person who may have written that next big chunk. That may have been an individual, but usually they say it was a group of individuals, maybe a school that had responsibility for 12 different little sections in the back third of the book. So why do they say that? Well, one is the time span that Isaiah covers. And the writing on this will be kind of small, and I'll talk you through it as we go through. It's small because I'm going to get a lot of information on this screen before we're done. But this is a timeline, and it goes from 740 B.C. at this end to 539 B.C. at this end. That's about a 200-year span, and that's the span that the book of Isaiah covers. Isaiah's ministry was the first 50 years of that span. Okay? And the first 39 chapters of that book are in that 50-year span, 50 to 60 years. Everything in the back half of the book comes down here at the end of that 200-year span, right before Cyrus of Persia takes Babylon, and then through after he sends the exiles home. So 200 years is a long time. When you put that into our world, again, this is small writing. I've got 2013, the present, over here. Well, 1812 is the 201-year drop back. So if Isaiah were writing today, the first 39 chapters of Isaiah would be about Presidents Madison through Lincoln, and the back half of Isaiah would be about President Obama. Okay? A big gap. That's one of the reasons people say, hey, these were written by different people. Because nowhere else in prophetic, in the prophets, does that happen. Now, the prophets do look ahead, but they don't write specifically about such wide-ranging time frames to audiences that separated. Another unique thing that makes them say, this was written by somebody else much later, Cyrus, the Persian king who takes over Babylon and lots of other things, is mentioned specifically by name in chapters 44 and 45 of Isaiah. Now, part of the reason that some people have an issue with that is they don't believe in predictive prophecy. So if you don't believe in predictive prophecy, seeing someone's name predicted 200 years out makes you think, well, they wrote it after the fact. They had to, because I don't believe in predictive prophecy. But even if you do believe in predictive prophecy, that's pretty unusual. A Bible author naming someone specifically that far in advance is very unusual. It only happens one other time in Scripture, 1 Kings or 2 Kings. Let's see if I have it in my notes. I don't have it written down, it didn't look like. But it happens once, one other time in Scripture in the Kings where Josiah, a king, is predicted 300 years in advance. But generally that doesn't happen. So it is unusual to see someone mentioned by name specifically. Again, if you were bringing it into modern context, it'd be the equivalent of someone in the Civil War predicting an African-American president named Obama 150 years later. You know, wow, that's kind of crazy. So that's another reason that people say these had to have been written by different authors. There's different subject matter. 1 through 39 covers something very different than 40 through 66. So you've got, in 1 through 39, we're talking about Assyria as the big enemy, and the nations as the foil against God. Who do you put your hope in? Who do you trust, the nations or God? And then you have judgment. Isaiah's preaching, hey, judgment is coming. We've got to change our ways. This is going to all fall apart. Well, the subject matter of 40 through 66 is very different than that. The enemy is now Babylon, and we're talking about the exile, and we're hoping for restoration, and we're planning for restoration, comfort. It's very different. Again, pulling that into modern context, back in 1812 to 1850, the enemy was England, Mexico, a little bit later in that time frame, and civil war at the very end of it. But today, Al-Qaeda is probably still the number one enemy on our list. You might say China is our biggest rival. North Korea, I don't know. And terrorism is the would be the topic of the day. Someone back in 1850 to talk about Al-Qaeda, it's crazy. Someone talking about Persia in chapters 1 through 39 and Cyrus, they're off the map. Almost nobody's. Okay? They're not a power of the day in that part of Isaiah. So again, the fact that these subjects are so different from each other makes people think, man, these had to have been written by different people. Isaiah 40 through 66 has been called, and I'm not able to judge this, the highest form of Hebrew poetry. And Isaiah 1 through 39 is not that. Historical narrative is how Oswalt, the primary author I'm looking to for my information, that's how he describes it as historical narrative. There's some poetry in there, but even that is not up to the standard that the poetry in the back half is, according to people who know. Some people who know. Again, bringing it into modern language, and this may not be perfect, but if Shakespeare were Isaiah 40 through 66, then George Lucas might be Isaiah 1 through 39. Shakespeare, highest form of English poetry, generally, up there for everyone. George Lucas, good stories, horrible dialogue. Okay? 1 through 39 is all that bad. But it's different. The key is that it's different. So there's a different vocabulary, there's a different style. So those are the main reasons that people would say it's have to have been by different authors. Anything you want to add to that, Lance, or anyone else, about the differences that I'm not bringing out? Yeah.
These were pretty astute people. Did they see what we were...
Yes.
How do you think it was always called?
We're going to talk about that. To some degree, I think there was some awareness of this. A lot of this stuff came up in the last couple hundred years. A lot of the analysis. Yes? One in every 17 verses in the New Testament is from Isaiah.
So, are they from the first
chapter? Both.
So, that doesn't tell a lot of...
We'll talk about that in a second, but that by itself doesn't. Right. Yes? No. By Isaiah's day, lifespan was like ours, but less, typically. I mean, you've got a society that really hard life. Isaiah lived to a pretty good age. I believe, tradition says he died strapped between two boards and sawn in half. He finally got to be too much of a gadfly, and they just took care of him. I don't know, probably. What do you think, Lance? Yep. Yep. Yeah. Typically, they're talking about our kind of lifespan, but life was harder, so they're, you know. Hey, you're getting ahead. You have to wait. You're going to have to wait. I'm sorry? Oh, yeah. Yeah, we're about to talk about that. Because I haven't yet told you my opinion, not that it matters. I'm just telling you why people think it may have been written by two different people or more. Nope. You can. Okay.
All this is so speculative that it's not helpful. And he made a lot.
All right, I'm going to move on. So why do some people think it was written by one person, Isaiah, the one who wrote the first half, wrote all of it? Well, first of all, we believe in predictive prophecy. So the fact that someone could write about a 200-year span doesn't really bother people that believe in predictive prophecy. The fact that you can name Cyrus by name doesn't bother people who believe in predictive prophecy. It's something that's allowed. Even those who do still say that Cyrus thing's unusual, and some of them will attribute that to later editors kind of explaining who Isaiah meant and inserting Cyrus's name there. But again, that's speculative too. But it's unusual enough that some people think that's why his name appears. As to the book being about very different subject matters, well, those who believe that it was all written by one person say, so? We write about different things all the time. And my son, in one class, is writing about history, and in another class, is writing about, I don't know, something else. Very different subjects. We do it all the time. Why can't Isaiah do it? Okay? I haven't read in any of the books someone actually used the word so, but that's the idea of it. Okay? As to very different types of narrative, very different types of literature, one historical narrative, one very high poetry. Again, those who believe it's all written by one author say so. John and Revelation, written by the same guy, very different types of literature. Right? Isaiah lived. That's what I was about to say. So you've got a 50 to 60 year ministry for Isaiah. I write very differently now than I did 20 years ago. Hopefully it's better, but it's different. Isaiah could have very well done both in 60 years. Better vision. And then we start talking about other things. So Isaiah chapters 36 through 39, the first two of those, is that four chapters? 36. First two of those happen chronologically after the second two. They're flipped. Okay? That's one of the things that confuses us about prophecy, because chronology doesn't always work like we think it should. Those four chapters, the first couple talk about Sennacherib and his attempt to take Jerusalem, and it fails. And then the next two talk about Hezekiah and showing the dudes from Babylon all the riches that he's got. Well, that actually happened before the other. You know, the reason people think it's switched is because, well, the next chapters 40 through 66 are going to talk about Babylon. So to make a neat transition into that, move it around so that the Babylon stuff is last in 1 through 39. Yeah. 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 So the idea here is that these stories at the end of 1 through 39 were arranged because they expect what happens in 40 through 66 to be next. Okay? Does that make sense? Because we're starting to talk about Babylon, so we've rearranged this chronology so that we're moving from 38 and 39 into 40 through 66 about the exile in Babylon and after. Well, someone could come back to that and say, well, someone later could have rearranged those chapters. You know, the other dude or dudes who wrote, or dudettes who wrote 40 through 66 could have just rearranged those chapters. Well, the people who think it's all written by one person would come back and say, there is part of 2 Kings chapter 18 through 20, which uses as its source these four chapters from Isaiah. So 2 Kings 18 through 20 tells the same story and also flips the chronology. Okay? And 2 Kings 18 through 20 has no reason to be leading into Babylon next. 2 Kings 18 through 20 flips the chronology, they believe, because it's using Isaiah as its source material. So, trying to connect all these dots. So that helps someone who says it's all written by one person, because generally people think 2 Kings was written, I don't have my timeline up anymore, about 560 something. It was written before all this Cyrus stuff. So you're getting closer to Obama there, but you're not there yet. So if 2 Kings was written before that happened, and it used these chapters in Isaiah as its source material, they were already flipped before Obama happened, before Cyrus happened. So it wasn't changed later. And I know that's a lot of little details. It's not that big of a deal in the end, but it's a textual reason why they say that arrangement has been in place for a long time. It wasn't flipped later. Do I need to explain any of that again, or should I just go on? Yeah, I should just go on. Yeah. Yep. People who say it was all written by one person also note that in chapters 40 through 66, you don't have any concrete historical references. So by that, I mean, in a lot of the Old Testament, you'll have things like in the fourth year of so-and-so after the so-and-so, right? You'll have these references to things that happened that put it in space and time. There's none of that in 40 through 66. So if it was written later, after the events actually happened, why wouldn't they have put those in? If it was written before, it was because those hadn't happened yet. Those references weren't there. So if it was prophesied, the main reference you have is to Cyrus, and some people would say that was still inserted later, but there are no other references to time and place in 40 through 66, which again points to predictive prophecy, which would justify a single author. Here's Lance's point. There is no version of Isaiah, no scrap of Isaiah that includes this 39 to 40 transition that has ever shown that they were separate sections, that one existed without the other. So there's no textual evidence like that for, no document evidence like that for them to ever have been separate, to be written by two authors. Now, it may come up at some point, but it's not there. And then New Testament attributions. Those who believe that Isaiah was written all by one author look to the New Testament, where authors say, and they're quoting specifically from the back half of Isaiah, 40 through 66, and they say, the prophet Isaiah said, and they quote something from the back half. Okay. There are ways around it, but it is very strong. Yeah, it's strong. It's very strong. Yep. And I can give you, after class, I've got six of those references written down if you would like to look at those afterwards. I'm sorry?
In the New Testament.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. Yes. Yes. The ones I've written down are all in the second part, because that's the part that people usually contest that was not written by Isaiah. But yes, the book is treated as a unit in the New Testament by one author. So. All right, let's see if I have anything else to say. I don't have it written up there, but the other piece of evidence that seems pretty strong to me is that the book functions as a unit. Even though there are differences, the story isn't finished when you get through 39. Now, that in and of itself isn't, you know, there are other books of prophecy that end abruptly. That's not unusual with prophecy. But the book works as a whole. There's a theological string that ties together through the whole. And it seems to be meant to be that way. Now, my opinion, which again doesn't matter a lick, but I'll tell it to you, is that it was written by one author. It does not bother me if some of you believe differently. Because however it came to be, by the time we get to the New Testament, Paul in 2 Timothy is saying, the form that it's in by now is authoritative. However it got to be in this form, doesn't matter. It's authoritative. 2 Timothy 3, it's part of Scripture, it's part of canon, it means something, all of it. So, I believe it was written by one author. If you believe differently, that's not going to be something I'm going to fight you about. Because I think you've got good reason to believe that. But there's good reason to believe the other way, too.
Another reason, maybe, so if, you know, assuming it's from one author, reasonable, I like it. People working in the field think that the core, no matter what came from Isaiah, we have editors doing stuff around it. Just like the first five books of the Bible, Moses didn't write about his death. I mean, somebody had to edit that in there. It doesn't change that Moses wrote it before. But it's, you know, they may have.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if you don't believe in predictive prophecy, I don't know what you do with the stuff that looks forward to Messiah. I don't think I'm going to be doing that anytime soon. Yeah, and that messianic stuff. Yep. Yep. Yeah, it's. I view that the same way I view parts of science. I think if you read Old Testament stuff about Messiah, and then you look at the life and character of Jesus and how he fulfilled that in such a deep way, and you don't believe in predictive prophecy, then you decided before you read it that you don't believe in predictive prophecy, and you're looking for a way to justify it. That's the only way I can understand that you would get that. Now, that may not be being generous enough to those who disagree, but I don't know how you get there. And in science, you know, I don't know how you look at order in nature and don't, and you have to choose not to believe before you look, almost, and then find a way not to believe, find a way to justify your unbelief, which God will let you do. But I don't get it. It's powerful. So. Holy One of Israel is used in both throughout, and it's unusual in the rest of Old Testament. There are phrases that are in both parts of Isaiah that aren't used much else in the Old Testament that do seem to indicate that it's written by one author. Yeah, that's good. I'd left that little piece out. Any other comments about this or scripture, inspiration, Isaiah? Would it make you mad if I didn't? Yeah.
And the Jews put it under one name. The New Testament authoritative writers, you know, I think that all that.
Yeah. All right. We're going to try to get as much of this next piece in as we can. This is your last chance. If you want to talk about inspiration, you're not going to get another chance. I'm glad. I agree with you. All right. Let's talk about context of pagan idolatry. We may not finish this morning. But as you read 2 Isaiah, and I'm going to keep calling it 2 Isaiah in the same way that I call 2 Timothy, 2 Timothy. I'm not denying that it's written by the same author. I'm recognizing that there's been a pivot. Something's changed. Time has passed. Subject matter's different. That just is that's the only reason I'm doing it. And to be a little bit marketing-like, to be a little bit controversial, which is always fun. So we talked about this in our Genesis study too. Pagan idolatry. Again, taking our 21st century view of pagan gods, by default, I think we look at these gods as fun little works of fiction. And, you know, like the Greek gods, and we look at those stories about how they were loving each other one day and then fighting the next day and then you know, just crazy stuff that it's fun to read. It's like any other bit of fiction. It's fun to read. And we take our view of those gods, and we think that's how they viewed them too. But in Isaiah's day, it was pre-science. Okay, we're still before the Greeks here, before the Greeks have had any influence on Western civilization. So pagan idolatry, pagan gods, this was their way of understanding how the world worked. This wasn't silly little fictional stories. They were looking for explanations of what caused things around them to happen. And these explanations made sense to them. And they worked for them. And they were passionate about them. So if I believe that there's a God in charge of the cycle of rain that influences crops, and I believe there are these rituals I'm supposed to be a part of to make rain happen, and you, my neighbor, don't believe that and aren't doing the rituals, you're putting my livelihood at risk. This was life and death, okay? If that's what I fundamentally believe about how these gods interact with me, and you don't, and you're my neighbor, I've got a great reason to kill you. Because you're putting my family's lives at risk. And so when you see Gideon in Judges tear down Asherah pole and a Baal, that's why people are mad at him. It's not because, oh, these are our stories that we love to tell. You've torn down our theater. It's you've put at risk our very lives. This was not, their view of idols and gods was not ours. And to read Isaiah like the first audiences would have read it, we have to, again, set aside our arrogance isn't quite the right word, but it's distance. There's been a lot of time passed between now and then. We have to get back into their time as best we can. So for me to get much further, let's see if I can cover anything else before everybody's going to be out. I think I'll stop there, and we'll pick up there next week. But let me let you react to anything that was said this morning while I pass out the optional homework for next week. Any comments about that? Oh, yeah. Yeah. He is very sarcastic. Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe we do need some things that we can throw away and burn visually to see that that's not
okay. Yeah. Yeah. Letty Jane and her parents are building an idol for us for when we start reading Isaiah. So I'm going to ask the elders to, is it a papal dispensation? How is it you get, the she's violating the second commandment. We need to give her some kind of break on that. But
we're not worshiping.
Oh, good. But she's fashioning one. We're going to use it in our class. So.
The rituals were, it's not like going to the Catholic Church. They were sexual.
Yeah.
Fun. Yep. So, I mean, we're not talking
we'll talk about that next week. Yep. You're right. They're participating in fertility with the gods. There is a reason why they do that. That's more than just fun. And we'll talk about that next week too. Other comments? I read this week that there are some bars in Los Angeles that are putting up Asherah poles. And I
really think they have power to money in the home. Mm.
Yeah. Yeah, yep.
Giving money to these people that are blatantly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They were here for a while visiting son.
There's talk of the way our society's heading, we're bringing some of those practices back. We're not naming them the same way, but the same practices are coming back. The optional homework for this week, some of you will be disappointed to see, is reading the same passages again. That's intentional, because we're in this immersive process. Part of understanding, part of interpreting, is to immerse yourself and read through the text multiple times before you start making decisions about it. So the extra assignment this week, if you choose to do it, is to read the text and start writing down words, phrases, ideas that Isaiah thinks are important or that he repeats. You don't need to do anything with them. Just notice them and write them down. Don't expect too much of yourself or this reading yet. It's coming. We got to go. All right. But that's the optional assignment. Again, it's not required. I can't require that of you. But if we're going to put the time into Isaiah, it's worth the investment. You will get more out of it if you do it. So please do. That's it.